And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht, with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Click, click.
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. We're actually recording this on Friday, June 10th, but this will come out on Saturday, so we have not seen what happens in Game 4 of the NBA Finals. You can tune into the Daily Ding if you want more finals coverage, but today we are talking more off-season-based stuff. We're going to talk about trades and free agency and the NBA draft. With me, as always, is my good friend Alex Spears. Alex, what's up?
Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. And I've got Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report. He's also the host of the Please Don't Aggregate This podcast, and the author of the book Built to Lose: How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. Jake, what's up, man?
How you guys doing? Thanks for that kind introduction.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. So let's start with Utah. The first domino fell in what looks like a dramatic summer for the Jazz when Coach Quinn Snyder stepped down earlier this week. Attention immediately turned to the Jazz's two stars, Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. So first, Adrian Wojnarowski reported that Mitchell was, quote, surprised and disappointed by the news of Snyder's departure. How is that report being interpreted around the league? Is this being viewed as Mitchell exerting his influence in the Jazz's head coaching search, or is this Mitchell laying the groundwork for a potential trade?
So around the league, not a potential trade immediately, but people are definitely thinking that, or interpreting, perceiving that development as Donovan and his people laying the framework for a potential request if the head coaching decision doesn't go the way that, you know, they theoretically would want it to go. So, I mean, they're obviously requesting permission to interview candidate after candidate after candidate here. A lot of people, the skeptics around the league are looking at that as saying, well, you know, Johnny Bryant, the Knicks associate head coach, is considered to be the clear favorite due to his relationship with Donovan Mitchell. You know, cynics originally said that the Knicks hired him to New York, you know, to help lure Donovan Mitchell. So, you know, it's definitely going to be an undercurrent throughout the Knicks, or excuse me, the Jazz's coaching search, that the future of Donovan, how much that next replacement could impact that.
So the Jazz haven't shown any willingness to engage in trade discussions around Mitchell, but they are willing to discuss Rudy Gobert. So he's a three-time Defensive Player of the Year, but he's also turning 30 this summer. He does have 4 years, close to $170 million left on his deal. How robust do you feel like the trade market is for Gobert? And do you think there are any deals out there that would actually allow Utah to remain competitive in the Western Conference?
The only three teams I've heard so far that have had legitimate interest in acquiring him are Chicago, Toronto, and Atlanta. There could definitely be more to come. I mean, we're recording this on June 10th. I know you said good morning. This is a Saturday show. You know, still basically just about 2 weeks left until the draft. We still got free agency, and the whole offseason will continue. You know, there could be plenty of more teams to emerge. But for now, you know, out of those three teams, I think Atlanta is probably the most intriguing in terms of a team that could provide something of real value to keep the Jazz in a deep postseason type of contention where, you know, if there's a framework, and I'm not saying these frameworks have been discussed, but to me, you know, think about it logically. If the Hawks are interested in Rudy Gobert, don't think they'd want to be paying like $50 million combined to Clint Capela and Rudy Gobert. I would imagine Capela would be the name going out the door. So if you can add Clint Capela with, you know, one or two other guys, you know, if it's John Collins or Kevin Huerter or Bogdanovich, you know, maybe we have a double Bogdanovich pairing in Utah. You can turn Rudy into two or three pieces. I think that's something that could at least keep the Jazz in the stratosphere that they're in right now.
So moving on to DeAndre Ayton, John Hollinger reported this week that while he was skeptical at first, he now thinks, quote, it's more likely than not that Ayton is in a new destination next season. Now that would require Phoenix either letting Ayton walk in restricted free agency or completing a sign and trade, which is complicated by rules like base year compensation. As detailed on the Timeline podcast, a great Phoenix Suns podcast, the history of sign-and-trade deals suggests the return wouldn't be awesome for Phoenix. Do you think there are workable sign-and-trade deals for Ayton out there that makes sense for Phoenix? Or is it more likely that Phoenix just signs Ayton and then trades him in the season?
Yeah, if DeAndre Ayton walks out the door, I fully expect it will happen via sign-and-trade. No one I've spoken to in the NBA expects the Suns to just let him walk for nothing. So you know, Detroit with Jeremy Grant is probably the one that has been theorized and talked about the most amongst people I've had conversations with. And I do think his number kind of slides in to the BYC rate if Ayton's getting like that $30 million. We're doing mental math and I'm not a cap expert, but Jeremy's contract's around 20. I think that math works. And you know, someone I spoke to this week about, you know, checking in on Jeremy Grant, potential destinations, he mentioned that his outcome might be very tied to what DeAndre Ayton does. You know, Toronto, I first wrote OG Anunoby and Raptors fans have just been coming for my throat ever since that on Twitter.
Shocking.
I just deleted my notifications tab on TweetDeck today. I didn't deal with it anymore. So I don't want to say too much about the theoretical idea of OG Anunoby going out the door, but I mean, there's a ton of combinations from Toronto that would in theory work, but you know, I don't think Pascal Siakam was someone that the Raptors would want to give up to go get DeAndre Ayton. I don't think, Fred VanVleet makes a lot of sense in Phoenix, right? And so, like, you got to give up something if you want to go get a starting caliber player making that much money. Sorry, I'm getting a bunch of calls here and just silencing all of them. So, you know, those are kind of the two situations that I think do make the most sense on paper if Ayton does leave via sign and trade. But that's also the complicated thing about forecasting this market, right? Like Toronto is going to potentially be a player for Ayton or Rudy Gobert or other centers. Like there's the only, just like at the trade deadline where there's buyers and sellers and there's only so many landing spots, like there'll be a bunch of teams interested in Big Ben. There'll be a bunch of teams interested in guards. But once these dominoes start to fall and players are off the board and destinations are off the board, the market starts to shrink and potential opportunities for Ayton will be impacted by potential opportunities for Rudy Gobert. So it will be interesting to see how all those scenarios end up kind of eating each other up.
Do you agree with Hollinger that it's more likely than not that Ayton's not in a Suns uniform next year?
I'm working under that assumption. Yeah. I've really been comparing it to John Collins in Atlanta, where John Collins' contract negotiation, his early bird deal, it was two years ago now, two summers where him and the Hawks are very far apart. All of a sudden, the Hawks have a great year. They go to the conference finals. He gets a 5-125 payday that he really wanted. Then last year's, you know, not a great season. And his name is – he's honestly probably the name – maybe I'm jumping ahead of your agenda, but he's honestly the name that I'm working under the assumption is, like, the most likely trade candidate of all these guys based off of what I'm hearing. And that all started with the fact, dating back to his early bird extension talks, that they were very far apart. And his representatives were even pushing Atlanta to explore trade conversations then. So you spin it to the Ayton situation. Like, they did not think he was worth the max. He wants to be, you know, a max player. That's not going to change. So I think, unfortunately for that marriage, it does seem like that's trending, you know, in the wrong direction.
Yeah. And then is Atlanta another team for Ayton, or are they just interested in Gobert?
Atlanta is definitely another team that I've heard for Ayton. Yeah. I mean, they're there's one person I talk to pretty consistently who's like convinced Ayton is the guy that Atlanta wants. But also, you know, like I said before, like all these, you know, door number one, door number two, door number three, player number one, player number two, player number three, they can kind of all shift depending on what happens.
Mm-hmm. So a few weeks ago, you wrote an article about OG Anunoby and his potential dissatisfaction with his role in Toronto. You noted, though, that perhaps the conversation around him has been more driven by external interests. Trading for OG obviously makes sense from the perspective of a team like Portland, but are there any other indications that Toronto has any interest in moving OG? Because as you wrote in February, the Raptors were telling teams that he was untouchable.
Yeah, I don't think they have interest in moving him, but there's definitely been a change of tune in Toronto that like they're listening on calls and engaging on calls. And I know Raptors fans will say, oh, well, Masai listens on everybody. And that's just not true. There's a lot of players in the league that teams do not listen on, and they immediately hang up. And like they were telling people at the deadline, we are not willing to discuss these six players. And that has changed now. So to me, as someone who kind of tries to operate as the 31st front office in the league, maybe it'll be 33 come 2025 when LeBron's new Vegas team comes out. But to me, that's like an interesting data point. Like if I was a front office and I was under that understanding that all of a sudden Toronto's now willing to talk about him, I'm giving Toronto a call to check on it. So to me, that's like a very tangible change. It is, but I don't think they want to move him by any stretch. It's just, look, they've got a logjam now of talent, being that they are trending in the right direction. They have Scottie Barnes taking, you know, a dramatic different scope of where that franchise's trajectory is headed. Scottie kind of plays a similar position to OG. Pascal's become, you know, more and more of a ball handler. Fred VanVleet has always been someone who runs, you know, a lot of their offense. So it only makes sense that he is trying to at least consider, he being OG, potential opportunities elsewhere to set him up for a bigger contract. Because if you're playing as the fourth or fifth guy on, you know, a four or five seed in the East, let's say, that's like probably what I think anyone's realistic expectation of what Toronto's projecting next season. Like, yeah, I think all these players have illusions of grandeur, right? Where like they want to get paid. They want to see themselves maximize and optimize before their short window of their career is over.
So with OG, like Portland's like an easy line to draw just because they're a team that's trying to get better. They've got the seventh pick. They've got assets. But are there any other teams that have shown interest in him that you know of?
Yeah, well, the reason why I wrote that story 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, is because he's definitely come up in the conversations that Toronto has had with Utah about Rudy Gobert. So I don't know if that's a deal that's going to make more progress or traction, but the conversation at least has been had.
So there's been varying levels of intrigue around four all-star guards who all have the ability to be free agents this summer: Zach LaVine, Kyrie Irving, Bradley Beal, and James Harden. Is your expectation that all four of these guards will end up back with their original teams for next season? Is there one that seems more likely to explore his options than others?
Beal seems to be the most secure, I would say, which is kind of interesting because he's been the one that everyone has
been
pinpointing everywhere else. I mean, Harden, I don't want to say too much because I'm still working to confirm some details. I fully expect him to be back in Philly too, but that door, I want to be careful what I say. I think the pathway to figuring out his contract situation is probably the most convoluted. With Kyrie in Brooklyn, I just don't see many options for him outside of Brooklyn, where, you know, it's not like, I don't think teams are going to be lining up to necessarily give Kyrie, you know, the money that he's looking for. And, you know, obviously the influence that he said out loud publicly on the record after, you know, they're sweep by the hands of Boston, that he's looking for, you know, within a franchise. So, and everyone I've talked to in Brooklyn is fully expecting those three guys, Ben, KD, and Kyrie, all to come back. Zach LaVine, I think he's definitely entertaining the idea of going elsewhere, but his people have certainly said that you know, they expect him to still head back. Who's the other Beal?
Oh, you hit them all.
Them all. Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of, I am expecting them all to stay back. But I think the door is more open for probably Zach than anybody else, even though I'm still thinking that he's sticking around in Chicago.
Oh, well, I'm very interested if you end up do having a piece about James Harden, just because I feel like that contract situation, there's so many angles to it that I feel like it could go so many different ways. So I'm excited. Like just the fact that he has the option to just opt in for next year, you could just stay there another year and figure it out later. And then you have the Daryl Morey connection. Like there's just so much there. It's a very, very juicy situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So moving on to the draft, there's a cliche said every year that the draft starts here. And this year the draft appears to start at 4 with the Sacramento Kings. There have been rumors of the Kings moving up, staying put, moving back, and adding another vet. What's your read on the value of that 4th pick, and what do you think is the most likely scenario for the Kings on draft night?
I mean, the Kings are going to probably entertain calls on that pick until they're on the clock, I think. I don't believe they'll make a deal until they're on the board and the clock is ticking and they actually know what happened at 1-3, because everyone is operating under the assumption that it's going Jabari, Chet, Paolo in some order. But that could change, right? And if one of those three guys is there at 4, all of a sudden the interest I think the Kings will have in that pick is, you know, far more vast. I could be wrong. They could decide to move, you know, Tuesday before the draft on Thursday. They made that move for Domantas Sabonis pretty early, you know, in the grand scheme of things and the trade deadline window in February. But most people I've talked to fully expect them to wait. But I'm a bit skeptical they'll find a trade that makes sense for them. Because if you look down at the rest of the lottery for teams that would in theory want to trade up, I don't see too many teams that have actual pieces that can help the Kings advance to the postseason, which is why they would in theory, why they are considering trade options at the 4th pick. Like the Thunder theoretically moving up, like, is Kenrich Williams, you know, like actually that's really going to help move the needle in Sacramento? No shots at Kenrich Williams. I think he's a really, really great player, but I don't see that. I mean, Portland's trying to trade out their own capacity at 7. You know, the Pacers at 6 is like a popular idea, but like they just made a deal with the Kings. Like, are they sending other pieces? Like, are they sending Buddy Hield back to Sacramento? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, there's not a lot of options on the field. Yeah. We never saw like Paul George going to OKC, right? So there's always going to be opportunities. But at this point, I'm prepared for the Kings to be able to stay, to decide to stay put and take someone like Keegan Murray at 4, because there just might not be that home run deal. Last year, it was the same thing where the Warriors were looking to trade to try to find, you know, someone that would help boost their title run that they're on right now. And the deal never materialized. So I think that could very well happen here too.
It's been so interesting because with Portland at 7, we've heard a ton of names like OG's been thrown out, John Collins, DeAndre Ayton. We've also heard about the Kings being willing to move at 4, but there hasn't really been a name attached to that pick in any way, like what a hypothetical deal would look like. Should we just assume that those same names that are out there for Portland would be names that the Sacramento would be interested in at 4?
I mean, those names are all in theory somewhat available, yeah. But I think the reason why the names are coming up in Portland is that there's an idea in the NBA ecosystem, let's say, that Damian Lillard is providing a list of players that he would like Portland to go get. And in Sacramento, I think it's just the Kings front office is trying to rack their brains and, compute different possible outcomes and try to figure out what option with the 4 pick, whether taking a player, whether trading that player, where they go buy, you know, someone with like, you know, adding pieces with the 4th pick or just selling off the 4th pick is ultimately their end goal of all their calculus is to make the postseason. But the Portland's end goal of it all is to make the postseason around Damian Lillard. So that's kind of the big difference.
So, and we talked about Sacramento, we talked about Portland. Are there any other teams that might be open to moving their pick in a win now move, or is it mostly the attention has been focused on those two teams?
I think the Pelicans would certainly listen. Obviously they just made the 8 seed. And it'd be nice to have a very solid contributor on a rookie scale deal to help, as they're going to have to pay, you know, Zion upcoming here, Brandon Ingram already signed a big massive deal. You know, there'll be more money to come being spent as the team continues to get better. But I do think they'd be open to listening. Spurs, I think, would be a team, being that they just have so many picks, that, you know, could they move up to four, you know, in theory, like, I guess, but like, again, like what veteran really do they have to kind of make that type of deal work? I think to trade out, I could see the Knicks at 11 if they don't see a piece that they really want. But I haven't heard that. And I saw Mark Stein tweeted or wrote in his Substack today that the Wizards are listening at 10 too. It just, what's interesting is that no one really knows how the draft is going to unfold outside of it. There's a kind of like a top five, honestly, with the big three guys and then Keegan Murray and Jaden Ivey. Shaedon Sharpe's kind of like loosely there as like the proverbial top six, but those five guys, people are pretty convinced they're going in the top five in some order. But after that, like 6 through 10, 6 through 40 can honestly go in any different scenario. So I'm sure that in a situation where a player is on the board at 10, or, you know, you're on the board at 10 or, you know, 11 or 12, where you weren't expecting your guy to be gone and another team wasn't expecting some guy to be there, there could be some synergy to make a deal happen. But that general uncertainty, I think, will leave a lot of teams open to at least talking and discussing their pick until they're finally on the clock.
So there's several teams with multiple first rounders in this draft: Oklahoma City, Memphis, San Antonio, Charlotte, Houston. Are there any teams that you think are being aggressive and trying to improve their draft position?
The only team I've consistently heard is going to make an effort to move up is OKC. I know I went on a Thunder podcast and said that they've been linked to Jeremy Sochan. And then, you know, Thunder fans said, I said they want to trade up for Jeremy Sochan. That's not what I said. I said there's a rumor going around the combine week that they want to trade up for him, which also I said on the show was that makes me think they don't want to trade up for him and that it's somebody else. Because last year we were just hearing James Booknight, and the Thunder did not pick James Booknight, right? So I don't have a strong sense of who the target is. Maybe it is Sochan, I don't know, but they're the ones that are the most consistently talked about, let's say, about a team that has designs on moving up.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see who, if they're able to, like, what pick do you think is most available? We talked about Portland, but they want a player. Is there a team that would take multiple picks to move back? Like, how do they make this work? How do they get what they want? Because obviously there's somebody that they want. They want to make sure he's there. Like who would be willing to move back for 12 and a future pick, or 12 and 30 and 34? Like, who, what team would be willing?
Well, I'm curious to see if, you know, Portland, for example, they were in on Jeremy Grant at the deadline. Mm-hmm. Didn't happen. He's still a name that they're being linked to. When they lost the Pelicans pick as the Pelicans made the playoffs, huge loss to the Blazers. They don't have two firsts now to go send to somebody. So does moving down, again, I'm just spitballing here, does moving down from 7 to 12, but getting an extra future first or so, does that give Portland the ammo to then flip those extra picks from OKC to go out and buy talent? That's something that I think is very in the realm of possibility. I don't know if it's been discussed, but that's the type of thing, like, will someone trade down with the Thunder to collect more future draft capital to then use that draft capital to in a trade now? That is something I think I'm kind of, my antenna is up for. I haven't heard it happening or being discussed, but to answer your question, that's kind of a scenario I could see unfolding.
Yeah. So right now, teams are bringing in prospects in for workouts and interviews. Are there any prospects whose draft stock is changing one way or the other after workouts or interviews, like guys shooting up draft boards?
One, I mean, this guy isn't like a top 20 pick, but one name that's definitely worked out really, really well and had a great combine showing is Andrew Nembhard from Gonzaga. I keep hearing people talk about him. People really like the Santa Clara kid. Is it Jalen Williams? Is that his name? Mm-hmm. Jalen? Yeah. I'm honestly like so bad. I used to watch so much college, right? And I used to know all these prospects like top to bottom, and now I'm getting caught up on all the names. And I call like assistant coaches friends who are in the draft workout to try to hear like the names that are popping up the most. But I also, I mean, the top prospects are starting to work out this week. So those names were really in like the early June, late May stuff. So I'm sure I'll get some different names now that I start to make more calls here in the next 2 weeks or so.
So you mentioned earlier that it's going to be Jabari, Chet, and Paolo most likely in that top three. Are you hearing that order as like the order that those teams will pick? And is there any chance that one of those three teams moves out of that particular draft position, either to move up or to move back? Most likely they're all going to make a pick somewhere, but are you hearing any chatter about that?
Haven't heard any chatter about someone moving down. Everyone is expecting it to go in that 1-2-3 so far. It could change. There's definitely, I'm not going to say anything at all specific, but there's definitely a thing I've heard of late that is making me a bit skeptical. It is going to go that 1-2-3. But at this point, I would think the safest money is Jabari going one, just being that Orlando really can't mess up this pick. They're in this rebuild, got a lot of young prospects, but they don't have the guy. So they're going to think long and hard, I think, about trying to take the guy that has like the most clear trajectory to being that guy. To me and to a lot of people on the NBA, it's Jabari. And he's kind of been the closest thing to a near consensus top prospect all along. Paolo, I think, though, is someone who could in theory be that, safest pick, but I've also been told that he and his people are not prepared for him to even be in consideration for one. Most people around the league are under the impression that Orlando is just choosing between those two guys. So that's kind of the safest bet amongst those three who's not going one, I would think.
Mm-hmm. And is there any, Jaden Ivey is the one that people think could be a guy that could jump into that top three. Are you hearing any other names, or are you even hearing that?
Yeah, people talk about, the Thunder might take Ivey at two. It's definitely, he's someone that a lot of people have like number one on their board just based off of the athleticism and the upside in theory. I love Javen Ivey back at Purdue when they were making their NCAA tournament run when he was a freshman. And I remember telling someone, a scout friend, like, this guy's going to be a top five pick next year. And they were like, no, he's not that good. And then all of a sudden, here he is. People are really excited about him and what he could potentially become. So if there's one guy to crack into that top three that's not those three bigs, I think it would be Ivy, yes.
Yeah. And then have you had any reads on Shaedon Sharpe? Like, he's the mystery guy of this draft. No one really knows what to do with him. Or I've seen him as like low as 12. I've seen him as high as like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
You have any feel for what is going to happen with him?
At this point in time, and again, all this stuff changes throughout. Like, I literally take these notes down and I'm talking out loud with some people that are my close confidants that we're trying to crack the draft together. And, right now at this juncture, he's the guy that I'm pinning as the most likely top, quote unquote, name to fall. Because if, let's say that scenario where the Kings don't trade out, they take Keegan Murray at 4. I think Detroit would probably be very happy taking Ivy at 5, being that they've been linked to looking at guards to pair with Cade Cunningham. At 6, are the Pacers really going to take kind of a gamble at a guard spot when they already have Tyrese Haliburton and Chris Duarte there? I'm not so sure. They've been, pretty mentioned at wanting to find a power forward. So I don't know if that's necessarily the gamble they'd want to take. At 7, with the Blazers trade scenario, like, it's completely up for grabs. Is someone trading up with them at 7 to go get him? Maybe, but if that's not the case, I doubt he would be the project that I doubt he'd be a project that like the Pelicans have wanted. 8, at 9, I've kind of heard from people picking below the Spurs. I think the Spurs are going to go center. So, is he there at 10? Like, I do think that's a realistic scenario. He also could go 4. Like, it's definitely, he is that man of mystery in this draft for sure. But I am kind of, being prepared for him to fall a little bit.
Jake, thanks so much for coming on the show. Go follow Jake at Jake L. Fisher on Twitter. Go pick up his book, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League. It's called Built to Lose. Thank you so much, Jake, for coming on the show.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. All right, Al, we are back from our break, and with us we have Brendan Nunez, who you can hear on the King's Pulse podcast and the King's Beat podcast. You can also read him at the King's Herald and the Sacramento Bee. Brendan, what's up, man?
Not too much, guys. Appreciate the invite, and I'm glad to be joining you.
Yeah, we're glad you're here, man. Kings are always interesting, and even more interesting that they have jumped up in the draft. The Kings have the fourth pick in this month's draft. Most mocks have the three bigs going, 1, 2, 3, in some order, leaving the Kings with an interesting choice. Popular opinion is that Jaden Ivey would be the next best available, but there are concerns about his fit in Sacramento. For a team that appears to be in win-now mode, what do you think about Ivy's fit in Sacramento, and would you pass on him for any other prospects that you think might fit better?
Yeah, I don't think his fit is great. I also don't think it's bad. Fox and Tyrese is going to get pointed to a lot in this process, and they had their bumps and I guess like growing pains that they were going through. I think particularly Fox getting used to just playing with another ball dominant guy and not having the ball in his hands at the beginning of every single possession and being the guy initiating. He's better at that, but I think he just needed to learn to play off ball a little bit more. And we saw that progress a bit. So while there were still growing pains, I think that like Fox and Tyrese would have worked. And I think Fox and Ivy would work fine on the offensive end as well. Ivy played alongside another guard all year at Purdue. I know that he is probably most ideal as the one initiating and being able to use that athleticism and create space. I do think that he needs some growth as a passer. I think the only real concern for me, less of taking the ball out of either guy's hand on the offensive end, is just the shooting. Like, I think that Ivy showed a lot as a shooter, a lot of improvement. He's certainly confident from beyond the arc, and I think that he's capable enough that I don't really have concerns there. I think that De'Aaron Fox is better than the percentage that we saw from him last year. And I am sure that he knows he needs to get better as a 3-point shooter to reach his eventual highest percentile outcome. So I think offensively, those guys work fine together. I think defensively is probably where you reach some question marks. And this is the same issue that was there with Halliburton and Fox, is just where's your perimeter containment. And I think the difference is, like, I don't know how Tyrese was ever going to be really good at containing on the perimeter with his lack of size, even though he's a really good off-ball defender. I think that Fox has had his moments being a good perimeter defender, and I think that Ivy had moments as well. I actually think Ivy and Fox are really similar defensively. They have all the athletic tools to be good defenders, but it's just about giving maximum effort and full engagement on that end. And I think that with so many different offensive creators, they could put a little bit more effort into the defensive end. And obviously, new head coach Mike Brown is somebody that's going to preach defense a lot to these guys. So I don't think that it's a phenomenal fit or anything like that. I think that Chet Holmgren and Jabari Smith Jr. are like practically perfect fits, but those are dreams at four, unless Sacramento's talking about trading up. And I just don't see how an organization like the Sacramento Kings, the draft is the only time that you're really able to get a star. even if you want to point at Sabonis, he was acquired because they nailed their number 12 pick in Haliburton. Like, the draft is the only way these small markets, in my mind, are really able to get a star. And so I don't think that they can overlook somebody that has, in my mind, star potential at number four for the sake of a little bit better fit in like a King and Murray. So I do think that Ivy is the clear guy at number four. If the three bigs and forwards kind of go in the predicted 1-2-3, that to me, Ivy's just too talented compared to the rest of the group to overlook.
You've been doing in-depth profiles of prospects on your podcast, King's Pulse. If the Kings don't take Ivy at four, who's your second choice?
Yeah, I think second choice for me is probably trying to trade down and get a little bit more with Keegan Murray, because I really do think that it is that top four. I do think that Ivy is sitting at four. Maybe Keegan goes five to Detroit. There's been a lot of talk about that potential, right? And who knows if Detroit would actually give up anything to move up one spot. Like, that doesn't seem the most realistic to me. So I guess it's Keegan Murray, because I do think that he is a really good fit for the Kings. He almost reminds me of a Harrison Barnes, and the Kings really do just need starter caliber players. Like, last year they're starting either Marvin Bagley or Chimezie Metu or Mo Harkless, Trey Lyles. Like, they really don't have another starting forward outside of Harrison Barnes. They really don't have rotation level forwards. So while I don't think Keegan Murray has star potential, I do think that he's going to be a good starter in the league for a long time, and the Kings need a lot of those. So I could see how they'd value Keegan a lot. I think if the Kings were sitting at five, I'd be pushing Keegan. So I guess it's fine.
Yeah. So the Kings just hired Mike Brown. They signed him to a four-year deal. But Monty McNair, the GM, who played a significant role in his hiring, he's entering the final season of his contract with the Kings. And according to Sam Amick, there have been no talks of an extension. How much do you worry about that pressure to make the playoffs influencing his draft decision? Like, can he even have someone like Shaedon Sharpe on his board, given the circumstances around this upcoming season?
Yeah, that's the never-ending question in Sacramento. I think even outside of a GM's contract situation, which that does obviously add a layer of complication, but I think it's already well known that even if he had additional years, the ownership group is looking to turn this thing around as soon as possible. Like, I think it was a Mark Stein reporting that said they want to have a Minnesota-like turnaround going into next season. And this is why, like, I've loved Chet Holmgren and the idea of trading up to get Chet Holmgren. But what's his impact going to be like in year one? In my mind, that shouldn't matter that much when you're talking upside in the top of the draft. But I think the Kings are in a position where it does matter. And I do think that Monty McNair and Wes Wilcox, like, their contract situation factors into it. I don't think that I would imagine that, say, they did like Shaedon Sharpe, but they thought that his production in the first two seasons wasn't going to be great. I don't know that they'd be willing to do that. I think they are in a situation where they are forced to make it happen as soon as possible. They need to see some significant improvement next year. And maybe that doesn't mean, you know, mortgaging the entire future for next season or anything like that, but there needs to be at very least a play-in game when it comes to Sacramento next season. And there's a good chance that, you know, Mike Brown being there the entire year compared to 17 games of Walton and then the latter for Alvin Gentry last year, and you get 60 plus games of Fox and Sabonis, when last year you were dealing with all the drama that surrounded Buddy and Bagley and those guys not being wanting to be there. And then Sabonis coming at the end of the season, and they traded six guys at the deadline. So I think even without a significant contribution from their draft pick in year one, that there should be an improvement based on what we saw last year. You know, the Kings are kind of in a spot where they want to turn around as quick as possible and are probably looking to fast track it. I don't agree with that, but I think that's kind of what history leads us to believe. And I don't know why it'd be any different, especially with only one year remaining for these GMs.
Right.
Yeah. Another option was brought up by Kevin O'Connor at The Ringer, who reported this week that Sacramento might be willing to move down in the draft if they could pick up a player that better fits their timeline in a deal. Are there any potential names that Kings fans have come up with that would make this type of deal worth it for the Kings?
It's tough. You know, if Detroit does like Jaden Ivey or one of the forwards that goes to four, could you get Sadiq Bey? Probably not in my mind, but maybe. Have heard Malcolm Brogdon in six, which I don't particularly love. I think you just take the star at four. I've heard Duarte, I think Vecini pitched Duarte in six for four. He said he wouldn't do it. If from Sacramento's point of view, I wouldn't either. The other one that stands out is they were linked to Kuzma before. They almost traded for Kuzma with that whole Buddy Hield deal that fell through. So is there Kuzma in 10? Maybe they need a four. It's intriguing. Again, I would just stay at four if I was the Kings, but it doesn't seem like they really like the Jaden Ivey fit. So those are ones that stand out to me. And then if you go a little bit further, like John Collins all the way down to 16, you know, that's intriguing to me. But those are the ones that kind of stand out to me. And all of them I could justify to myself as being okay because I understand that they feel a need to turn it around quicker. But the fact that I'm even saying it that way clearly means I'd rather just take the guy at four.
Right.
God, Kuzma in 10 just feels so Kings, doesn't it? That just, if you were to have if a trade had a feeling, the feeling would be Kings on that one.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And he was good last year.
He was good last year. Like, he was legitimately good. People didn't understand how good he played for the Wizards last year. But at the same time, you get lucky and get up to four, and you're like, awesome. We're gonna turn it to Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah,
just feel and it might help them get to the play-in. It might help them get ultimately to where they want to go. But on draft night, it would just be like.
The issue is where do you want to go? This is the issue to me is like the goal. I understand the goal for next season and for one season being the play-in. That's fine.
Yeah,
but you have to make sure you're not building a roster that has no chance of ever getting out of the first round.
Right,
and. Yeah. I don't know that I view Fox and Sabonis as like, I think they can be really, really good. I also do have a lot of questions about that fit. Like, I think that both of them have been subpar defenders, average defenders, maybe at best, and they have potential to be better, but it's just potential right now. And then offensively, neither of those guys shoot. So you're really forcing yourself to get the rest of the surrounding rosters be very specifically, they all have to be plus defenders and they all have to be plus shooters, which I know is more and more common in today's NBA, but it's like, you also, in my mind, do kind of need top end talent. And I think it's a mistake if they're so focused on the play-in that there's not another bigger goal of eventually getting beyond that.
Yeah. So the draft obviously is the focus right now, but the Kings also have a lot of work to do this offseason, just building a team around Fox and Sabonis. One of the knocks on Sabonis is that as good as he is, he's a difficult player to build around. What kind of skills would you look for in a front court sidekick with him? And are there any players out there, either in trade or free agency, that you'd like the Kings to target for that role?
Yeah, it's interesting. Miles Turner, can I say that one? I do think that... just a joke, but I do think that that's kind of ideally you're hoping for a guy that's a really good shooter and also a rim protector as a four.
Yeah.
I do think you want Sabonis playing the five is the idea, especially if you're looking for a high paced offense. Like it seems that Sacramento probably would stick with even with Mike Brown coming in my mind. So he stands out to me. I mean, I know it's not the most realistic, but there've been whispers of trading up to two. And I think that Chet Holmgren is a dream fit, a guy that shoots like he does and the rim protection that he offers. And
let's talk through it because we're OKC guys.
Yeah.
And, we cover the team. So let's talk through like what the framework of a deal that makes sense for both teams could actually look like between the Kings and the Thunder. Because I think some things have been thrown around on both sides where it's like, well, that's unreasonable, is kind of the thought of both fan bases. So like what have you heard that seems the most reasonable for them to like actually make that happen?
I kind of think of the Fultz and Tatum swap and then the Luka and Trey swap. And to me, it's kind of next year's first. Like, what would you guys think if from OKC's point of view, if Sacramento called and offered the fourth overall pick, and they're 2023 top four protected, and then it goes into unprotected the year after for number two.
It's tough for us to say anything because we're like so Chet brain right now. Like we've been talking
me
about
too.
Chet for like 2 months. But obviously we've heard the rumors everyone else has heard that like maybe OKC is interested in Jaden Ivey, and we've been having draft guys on kind of talking us through that potential fit. So like, from our perspective, it's like, well, if Presti really believed that Jaden Ivey was the guy, at some point you just got to trust him. And then if he's making that deal, like why wouldn't you feel good about it at the end of the day? Like, it's going to be hard for Pressey to make a deal that we won't feel good about, because he obviously is working with way more information than we are. I do think the protections is where, like, I almost think it would have to be like top two or something.
I was going to say top one protected, just in case like the Kings get the number one pick in like this insane draft where they're just trying to protect themselves, you know, in case something crazy happened. To me, that would be more reasonable, just because it does feel like the difference between Chet and Ivy feels pretty significant to me.
Me too.
And so to me, it would have to be like next year's like top one protected pick, and then becomes unprotected if they get Wembanyama, you know, in the next
year. Which you wouldn't care about at that point, because you have Victor Wembanyama.
You'd be right, fine.
You have Victor Wembanyama and Chet in that scenario. You're the craziest front line in the world.
Yeah, all the length you could ever need.
So Davion Mitchell had an up and down rookie season, but he really turned it on near the end. He averaged 10 assists per game in his final 10 games. He also scored 20 plus points in six of those games. For people who understandably might not have been watching the Kings in March and April, what can you tell us about his development over his rookie season?
Yeah, you know, Davion is interesting. Davion's obviously, his work ethic is talked about all the time, and it was a little bit frustrating this year to ask any sort of question about Davion, because you constantly got a response of, I don't care that he's struggling, he works his butt off, he's going to figure it out. And it's like, okay, great. He's also shooting horribly from the free throw line, so I don't know what to tell you. Davion did have a lot of progress. I think he got a lot more comfortable. He looked the most comfortable when he, I guess, ironically, had the ball in his hands a lot.
Yeah.
When one of Fox or Tyrese was out, when Tyrese eventually got traded and Fox went down, Davion had a great end to the season. He also was getting up more shots than I think is reasonable for him to expect on a healthy roster. Him and Damian Jones are just running pick and roll over and over. And if both of their numbers were phenomenal to close out the season, I don't know that it's a great representation of what Davion is as a player moving forward. He's a hard one to evaluate in my mind, because the idea is this ridiculous work ethic, but the reality is that he really didn't shoot the ball very well last year. 31% from three, and he kind of had an up and down year, only 65% from the line, and he's not barely getting there more than once a game. His passing wasn't overly impressive. I don't think he makes very many bad passes, but I don't think he's somebody that in my mind makes impressive reads that are beyond anything, kind of just the first read that he's seeing. So limits a little bit in my mind what I view right now as his ceiling. I personally think that Davion is a really good backup point guard, and that's kind of what I would project him moving forward, which I think I catch myself not liking Davion maybe as much as a lot of the fan base and other people that cover the team. And it almost makes me feel like I'm just like talking bad about him all the time, because so many people believe in him so much, but I just haven't seen it yet. I think that he needs to really improve off the ball, and especially that 3-point shooting, and show that that senior year at Baylor wasn't just an outlier, because right now it is kind of looking like that. Because if he wants to play alongside Fox and Sabonis, has to be able to shoot the ball well. Defenses were not concerned with him shooting the ball. He ended up with 32.8% on his catch and shoot 3-point attempts this year, which is unideal to say the least when it comes to that Fox and Sabonis pairing, where shooting is so crucial. I think he has a really good job of creating a space for himself on offense in the pick and roll, but not efficient enough in creating for his teammates, to me, where it's like, that's a guy that you want as your starting guard that's initiating the offense every single time. So I think he's a really good backup point guard, phenomenal defender. Obviously I probably should start with that, but I feel like everybody knows what Davion does on the defensive end. He's one of the best isolation defenders, guard defenders, weirdly, in the league already, in my mind, when it comes to defending opposing guards. But offensively is, to me, where I kind of still view him as the ceiling being a backup point guard, which is fine, for where he was picked.
So final question. It's been 16 years without the playoffs. You've been through several cycles of hope and disappointment. It's early in the process, but you have Sabonis. You hired Mike Brown, got the fourth pick. As of June 11th, 2022, where are you emotionally with the Kings? And where's the belief right now in this being the year that breaks the cycle?
emotionally with the Kings. I think you try to remove all emotions possible when you're talking about the Kings. Apathy, maybe. Yeah, that's a tough one. I'm excited to watch Fox and Sabonis. Those guys clicked right away when Sabonis showed up. They only played 15 games together, but Fox theoretically should be a really, really good cutter. And I think we saw a few moments of that. Again, they only played 15 games together, but he's so quick, obviously, but also twitchy that I think he's good at fakes off the ball and getting nice backdoor cuts and things like that. And just being able to play with such a dynamic pick and roll player, I think will be new for Fox, a guy that he can trust to give the ball in the short roll. And there's a chance that he gets it back, because before, Rashawn Holmes is a ridiculous pick and roll player, but if he gets the ball at the elbow, he's going to that push shot every single time, and there's no really other option. So I'm excited to watch that duo and also whatever ends up being this draft pick. And when it comes to expectations for next year, I do think that they really have to be in the play-in. If I had to guess, I would guess that they make the play-in and then lose the game. But it gets difficult because it's easy to look at the roster and be like, oh, this is a play-in roster. They're talented enough. The West is pretty tough, as I'm sure you guys know. Like, the teams that are sitting there from 8 to 11 or 12 are all, like, the Kings might be the worst roster among them. And who knows if, like, I mean, what if OKC puts it together with one of their top picks? Portland, what ends up happening with Dame coming back and what other moves they end up making? Like, weirdly, I could see a scenario where the Kings are also 13th team in this year. I don't think I'd bet on that. I'd bet more that they're 10th, but as the roster is talented enough in my mind to flirt with like a 38 win season, but it's difficult when you start comparing it to the rest of the West, because that bottom there is all filled with a lot of talent on those rosters.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com/courtside to learn more.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Well, Brendan, thank you for answering all our questions. It is now time to play Andrew versus the Beat, our weekly trivia show where Andrew goes head to head with a beat writer. This week, his opponent is Brendan Nunes of Kings Pulse, Kings Beat, Kings Herald, and the Sacramento Bee. Now, Brendan, how this works, I've come up with 8 questions about the Kings. Some are easy, some are hard. You're going to give me a number between 1 and 8. If you get the question right, you'll get 2 points, at least 2 points. If you get it wrong, Andrew will have a chance to steal for 1. And we'll go back and forth until all the questions have been asked and answered. Before we start, I will note that last week, I made a massive mistake, Andrew. I had a question about...
You heard about it all week.
I did hear about it all week. Yes, I had a question about first-year coaches who had won the championship. I had only found two when I Googled and only looked at the first search result. Andrew brought up Steve Kerr. Multiple other people brought up Ty Lue. And they also brought up Nick Nurse. All of those are correct.
Yeah.
And so I think the fans actually outscored both of you last week. And so you lost, Andrew, I'm sorry to say. Okay, so Brendan, we're going to start with you. So just give me a number between 1 and 8.
6.
Question number 6. According to 538's Raptor metric, there were only two Kings who had a positive overall Raptor last season. Name them both. Now, the hint is that these are only players on the roster at the end of the season. So we're not talking about Halliburton, no Buddy Hield. So it's only guys who are on the roster who played for the Kings last year. And you'll give me both names. I won't tell you if they're right or wrong. Just give me both of them.
Okay, this is me first.
Yes.
We're going to go with Harrison Barnes. And we'll say Trey Lyles.
Harrison Barnes and Trey Lyles. That is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal. Two Kings who had a positive overall Raptor last season.
Oh, my. Rashawn Holmes and Harrison Barnes.
All right. You guys didn't get any of them. Congratulations. The two names, Domantas Sabonis.
Okay.
Well, did that sound too easy? Is that why you didn't guess that?
Yeah, it sounded way too easy.
And then Terrence Davis. Terrence Davis.
Terrence Davis, who,
by the way, let me make sure I didn't include this question. No, I didn't. If you look at two-man lineups for the Kings last season, all like the best ones who played more than 200 minutes all have Terrence Davis in them. Okay, score 0-0. Andrew, it is your turn.
Number one.
Question number one. There are only 11 active players who have as many or more career triple-doubles than Domantas Sabonis, and we're going to name them all. Now, as a hint, Sabonis has 18 career triple-doubles. So you're going to give me a name of someone who has had at least 18 in their career, and they're active players. And then Brendan will give me a name, and we're going to go back and forth until one of you stumbles. So Andrew, triple-double name.
Russell Westbrook.
Great guess. That is correct. Over to Brendan.
I'm going to go with LeBron.
That is number two on the list. Back to Andrew.
Luka.
Luka is number five on the list. Back to Brendan.
Giannis.
Ooh, dicey here, but that is correct. He's down at number nine.
James Harden.
James Harden is number four. Back to Brendan. You guys are doing great so far.
Draymond?
Draymond Green. That is correct. He's number eight.
I was confident.
Back to Andrew.
Yeah. Nikola Jokic?
Yes, he's number three overall. I'm glad you guys got that one. Back to Brendan. We have four names left. So these are all active players who have had at least 18 career triple-doubles.
Lonzo Ball?
Lonzo Ball, that is incorrect. The other names, Rajon Rondo.
Oh.
Ben Simmons. Kyle Lowry. And also with 18 triple-doubles, Chris Paul. Chris Paul.
Wow.
Tied with Domantas Sabonis. Okay, Brendan, you're down, but you have control of the board.
Oof. We'll go with four.
Question number four. The Kings made 8 straight playoffs under Rick Adelman. Since then, the Kings have had 11 different coaches. Which of those 11 coaches had the best winning percentage during their Kings tenure?
This is a sad one, but Luke Walton.
That is correct. It was Luke Walton with 42.2 winning percentage. You know who was very close, though?
Jaeger?
Reggie Theus. Theus was right there.
Reggie Theus.
Okay, wow. We got a tie game. Andrew, control the board.
Number two.
Question number two. The last time the Kings made the postseason was the 2006 playoffs, where they lost in 6 games to the San Antonio Spurs. Which player on the Kings averaged 23 points per game in that first round series, best on the team? You got to think back.
Oh my gosh.
Old school Kings, 2006. What was that, Andrew?
Is this Ron Artest? Ron Artest, Meta World Peace, whatever he's called, Panda's friend.
Ron Artest, he was on the team, but that is incorrect. Brendan, you have a chance to steal. Man.
I believe it's Kevin Martin.
That is also incorrect. It also wasn't Mike Bibby, who was their leading scorer in the regular season. It was Bonzi Wells. Bonzi Wells blew up in the playoffs.
That was a good one.
Okay, Brendan, It is now tied, and you have control of the board. Where would you like to go next?
Go with eight.
Question number eight. Did you know the Sacramento Kings took the fifth most free throws in the league last season? Name the four teams who took more free throws than the Kings last year. And I'll give you 1 point per correct answer. So there's a possibility you could get 4 points here. So these are just teams that had attempted more free throws or took more free throws than the Kings last season.
Me first, right? The
you're going to be all of them. So you could you could possibly get 4 points here, which would be very exciting.
The Sixers.
The Sixers is one. So that is 1 point for you.
Utah?
That is correct as well. They were number one. Philly was number two.
Wow.
Can you get another one, Brendan? You're now up 4-2.
There's two others. Milwaukee?
That is incorrect. Now, Andrew, you have a shot here. If you just want to throw out some names, you got any ideas?
Dallas?
No. I would be shocked if you got the names because it is the Knicks and the Rockets.
The Rockets.
The Knicks I kind of get.
The Knicks I can get.
The Rockets, I was surprised.
I never got to.
Okay. Yeah. Brendan, you are now up 4-2, but Andrew, you have control of the board. Back and forth battle. Andrew, who had the most dunks for the Sacramento Kings last season? Who's the best dunker, Andrew?
This has got to be somebody weird, right?
I don't know. It could be someone normal.
Is there normal players on the Kings?
Yeah, it's got to be somebody weird because it's the Kings. That's why. Shoot.
Who seems like a big dunker to you? Thinking about the Kings roster.
Slamming is it Chimezie Metu?
Andrew, it is Chimezie Metu.
Wow. Yes. Wow, yes. Great guess.
By I'm one a, dunk kinda... over Rashawn Holmes.
Oh, really?
Okay.
That was the other one I was considering.
So we're going...
Not a lot of dunkers.
There's two questions left. We have a tie ball game. 4-4. Brendan, would you like 6 or 7? Did I... Or wait, 5 or 7?
We'll go with 5.
Okay. How many players on the Kings had a 30-point game last season? Now, before you answer, you are going to get to choose who answers first. So you can either give me a number, and then Andrew will say higher or lower, or you can make Andrew guess first, and then you can say higher or lower. Now, if you let Andrew guess first, there's a potential that he could get it exactly right, but it's up to you. So these are just players who had at least one 30-point game for the Kings last season.
Am I naming players?
No, you just give me a number.
Okay.
A number of players.
I guess I'll go first.
Okay.
Give me a sec. Okay. Let me.
And this would include players that were traded. It's just anyone who had a 30-point game on the Kings.
We're going to go with 6.
6 is the number. Andrew, would you like to go higher or lower than 6?
I'll say higher.
Higher than 6? Andrew, that is incorrect. The right number was 5. Sabonis, Fox, Halliburton, Terrence Davis, and Harrison Barnes. That means...
Wow.
Terrence Davis.
Yes. That means, Brendan, you have 6 points to Andrew's 4 points going into the final question. Andrew, you could tie it up here on the final question.
Okay.
Davion Mitchell made 101 three-pointers in his rookie season. There were only 4 rookies who made more threes than Mitchell: Jalen Green, Cade Cunningham, and these 2 rookies. So these guys were 3 and 4 among all rookies for total threes made. And I'll give you 1 point per correct answer, but you got to get them both to tie up the week, Andrew.
Oh my gosh.
Got to think about some sharpshooters.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to get this. Franz Wagner?
Andrew? That is incorrect, which means Brendan wins the week 6-4. Unless, Brendan, you'd like to take a guess, we could add some points on just for fun.
I was going to say Franz. The other one I had was Duarte.
Also wrong. The 2 names, Corey Kispert and Bones Highland.
Corey Kispert played enough? Okay.
I wasn't going to get there.
Congratulations to Brendan for defeating Andrew.
Wow.
I'll take it, I guess.
Congratulations, Brendan.
That was fun, guys.
Brendan, thanks so much for coming on the show. go check out Brendan's podcast. He has multiple podcasts that you can go listen to, King's Pulse and the King's Beat podcast. Go check those out. Brendan, thanks so much, man.
Of course, guys. Glad to do it. Hopefully we're talking again when the King's straight up to two.
No, no.
We will talk if that happens for sure. Thanks, man. Thanks again to Jake Fisher and Brendan Nunes for coming on the podcast. Continue to listen. We will have a Daily Ding episode that went up after game four. So if you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to that. We are going to have coverage throughout the NBA Finals for you. And then upcoming, we have the NBA Draft. We will have a live draft show for you on the Athletic's YouTube page. So be sure to tune in to that and look for all the draft coverage coming at you in the coming weeks. Things are not going to stop at all, because then we have Summer League and we're going to have a ton of Summer League content coming at you. We're actually going to be at Summer League, the Athletic NBA show is. So just so much content coming at you. So be sure to subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com/NBA show. You can get it for $1 a week. You can also listen to this podcast without any ads whatsoever, which is the best way to listen to it. Enjoy your weekend and the basketball, and we will talk to you guys again next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.